Hey, welcome to the Happy Rant Podcast. I am Ted Cluck, joined as always in studio by my good friends and my partners in radio, Barnabas Piper and Ron Martin. Boys, I want to get right into this because we have breaking news. We have a dispatch from the front. We have a dispatch from the ramsification of our churches. And I'm speaking, of course, of Barnabas Piper's appearance at the Dave Ramsey Christmas party. So, boys, we've talked, I think, ad nauseum about Ramsey on this program. We've talked about how growing up there was no Dave Ramsey. So growing up, there were no guys in our churches really who were obsessed with becoming millionaires and financially independent and couching it in the language of spirituality. There were very few guys in the 80s and 90s with side hustles. You didn't get to know a guy and then learn that he had like a side business flipping houses or selling chickens to homeschool kids or whatever. But all of that is part and parcel.
Wait, I
with
thought
being
every homeschool person in the 80s sold chickens. I'm confused.
I don't think there were homeschool people in the 80s. There weren't where I grew up. But,
oh, no, that's right. They were called cults, and everybody was nervous about them.
That's true. No one's nervous about them anymore because they're everywhere, selling chickens and building empires and getting financially independent and then being smug about it. So this is the world that we live in 2019, where you're nothing if you don't have your house paid off by 40. And we have Dave Ramsey, by and large, to thank for this. So, Pipe, I want to frame this conversation in a way that will keep you okay with your new girlfriend. And I want to do that by, like, me being the ass about this, by and large. And I want to free you to defend Dave Ramsey and talk about all the good he's doing and how he's saving marriages by helping people to get financially independent. And I'll be the bad cop on this one. So I want from you just a little reportage of what the party was like, what you saw, how it made you feel, et cetera.
Well, yeah, I appreciate you putting me in a position that's not like I'm going to have to go dig myself out of a hole later. I might have to anyway, just because of that's the way I work. But
dude, blame me. I'm the bad guy.
All right. Ted's the bad guy. Lauren, if you're listening to this, Ted is the bad guy. So the Dave Ramsey Christmas extravaganza is unlike any Christmas party I have ever observed or attended. It was everything you would expect from like a massive corporate shindig minus like the cocaine and debauchery.
I was going to ask about cocaine. That's crazy. You read my mind.
Yeah, no cocaine. Well, I knew that was coming because I believe there was cocaine present at Nakatomi Plaza, and that's a natural connection to make. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, no cocaine that I'm aware of. No obviously strung out people. So, first of all, Dave's whole premise in this, in like this endeavor of his, is essentially get rich so that you can live comfortably with no regrets and be generous. Well, I think he basically lives up to what he teaches with that because he's very generous. This like they foot the bill for what had to be millions of dollars worth of Christmas party. So every employee is given money to go out to dinner before the thing starts, like just a set amount, and you can, you know, anything above that is on you. So we went to dinner at this really nice steak place, and then we went to the Opryland Hotel, which for those of you who haven't been there is not a hotel. It is an alternate universe. You've been there, right, Ted?
I have, but it's been a few years.
Okay.
Yeah.
Ronnie, you ever been to the Opryland Hotel?
I haven't.
Okay. So you go in and when you pull up, it's like glass domes and different things. And you're like, what is going on here? And you go in and there's different sort of, like arenas or pods with rooms around them. And so one of them is sort of jungle themed. One of them is a little bit more like waterfalls and alpine kind of thing. And then there's ballrooms. It's impossible to find your way around, but they deck it out with more Christmas lights than I've ever seen in one place ever. So the whole thing is just sort of this festive alternate universe full of tourists and now full of very nicely dressed Ramsey employees and their dates. So we get there, you go in, everybody has a lanyard. They have this thing locked down with security so that only Ramsey people can get in and out. There's no gate crashers at this party. And you go into this massive ballroom which has three or four bars set up, photo booths, whatever. And you look around, you're like, this is going to be a nice party. Like, it's a big ballroom. There's drinks, there's mm-hmm. hors d'oeuvres, whatever. And then they start the program. And they got the big stage. They do like a 10-minute hype video. So imagine like the video that played before the Chicago Bulls came out in the 90s. You know, lights go down, music like thumping through your sternum kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And it's just highlights of everything that they've done over the course of the year. So the number of people they've helped, the amount of debt they've helped relief, investments, blah, blah, blah. You know, they call out all the different departments, and so you hear cheers from different parts of the room and stuff like that. Then the lights come back up, and Dave like sprints on stage. He is the he's the most energetic little rich man I have ever seen.
Is he a little guy? Is he Dave's a short guy?
Yeah,
isn't he?
He can't be taller than 5'8". He's not a big man. And he, you know, thankfully he kept his remarks brief, but
that was good.
It was basically just reiterating what I said at the beginning. Like, our goal is to be really successful so that we can give all this away, and we want you to have a great time. And then they called out, like, their – I don't know what his role is there, his chief hype man officer or something. Mm-hmm. And he did sort of like the breakdown for the evening. Turns out there wasn't one ballroom that they were using. There was four, plus an outdoor patio plaza. So there was a jazz club ballroom. There was a like Cuban themed salsa dancing ballroom.
Yeah.
There was a silent
there was a silent
disco ballroom, which I did not set foot in.
I'm not sure what a silent disco is. Is that a thing I should be aware of?
It
Ron,
is.
Do you know?
Silent disco?
Yeah.
I don't think I'm familiar.
Okay.
I don't know.
Me neither.
So this is what a silent disco is. It is where you go in and they give you headphones. And you play music of your choice. So everybody's listening to different music.
I totally
and
know. Yeah,
dancing.
Totally
and you're watching people and hearing nothing. Everybody's sort of grooving, gyrating, dancing to the music of their own choice.
And these are all rich, suburban Nashville white people doing this, by and large.
Largely. I mean,
it's like, I want to be with you, but I don't want to listen to the music you like. So if I can just kind of like, I can be with you in spirit, but just be trapped in my own mind with my own tunes.
Well,
it's perfect.
There's also like gradations of wealth in the room because it's a 1,000-person company. So I'm sure there are people there who make like $35,000 doing, you know, secretarial work or whatever. So there's quite an array. But yes, mm-hmm. Mostly people between the ages of 25 and 40. Of the middle and upper middle class white variety.
There we go.
Then the outdoor plaza.
Shocking.
Had a cigar lounge with a bourbon tasting because Dave loves bourbon.
Oh,
so,
Davey.
That's surprising. That's kind of surprising.
He's a rich guy. He likes the finer things.
It could be considered controversial
He's a southern rich guy, which is why it's bourbon and not scotch. And so so they actually had a guy come in who works at Buffalo Trace Distillery who
of course they did.
Who kind of oversaw and helped with the bourbon tasting. Then on the other side of this plaza was the photo booth with the live reindeer.
Yep.
So all of this happened, and employees just had access to all this, along with, you know, hors d'oeuvres everywhere and desserts and like a make your own s'mores station and stations. Everything was multiple stations.
Steaks provided by Maddie Chan.
I didn't see Texas Craft Steaks present, but maybe that's a connection we can make for next year.
Yeah. I like it. Now, Ronald, do you have Dave worshippers in your church? I'm sure you do.
Dude, no, I mean, we absolutely do, but like we never mm-hmm. talk about it, and I haven't really. Like, I haven't been inundated with like envelope cashie shares. So I don't know. I mean, I know we have to have those.
Sure.
I don't think I've really had a convo with anybody in the last few years about anybody sort of like bowing at the altar of DRAM.
Of Dave, of DRAM. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I just don't. Which is weird when you think about it, because I feel like it's weird that just you saying it right now, Big T, like, I can't believe I haven't been approached by somebody saying, surely, Ronnie, 2020 is going to be the year when you finally do like a Dave Ramsey like seminar or something.
Financial Peace University is the name you're looking for. That's the church program. Yeah.
I love how Pipe just has all the lingo down.
Absolutely. Pipe's like basically that. An employee at this point.
Pretty much.
How long before Pipe goes to work for?
Oh, 100%. I didn't want to bring it up, but I mean, are you saying like spring 2020? Or are you going to give him to the fall?
All right, here's the thing about working for Dave Ramsey's company.
Yeah,
I would get fired in 7 minutes.
Why? Because you're too much like us.
Because you like to spend money, Pipe, or like what are we talking?
You know, I may be carrying some debt with me right now. That's probably a no-fly zone. Actually, they'll hire people who are in debt, and then they're like, we're going to make a plan for you to get out of this. No, it's because I have too many opinions, and I don't shut my mouth. So, his company consistently is rated as one of the best places for people to work, like by, you know, business, you know, the annual publications by business magazines and stuff like that. So best in Nashville. But the people who leave there hate it. So 90% of the people, and they have a really rigorous interview process. I know a bunch of people who have gone like 6 interviews in and haven't gotten jobs. So they're trying to vet really closely who works there so that it fits.
Yeah.
And so the people who are in there are really in there. And I wouldn't make it past 2 interviews, I don't think, because they'd be like, oh, yeah, this is not going to happen. Just because I don't do well marching to the beat of a corporate drum very well.
A corporate drum that's a little bit cultish. And again, this is me talking and not
bad copying it. We got you.
Yeah, this is me bad copying. Now, not to take it to too serious or like, I don't know, theological of a place, but what would like a Ramsey disciple do with Proverbs 38, which is the whole like, give me neither poverty nor riches thing?
Proverbs 38? Proverbs only has 31 chapters.
Proverbs.
It's different between Dave Ramsey and David.
Oh, 30 verse 8. Got you.
Dude, Mike, you went all like vacation Bible school on me right there.
Wow. I was like, wait a minute. What are you talking about? Got you. Okay.
Do you even know your scripture?
That was awesome, though. That was awesome. No, it was good. No, you know what I'm talking about, though.
I feel justified in my smugness.
Yeah, the whole give me neither poverty nor riches, but give me only my daily bread. You know, that whole deal. I'm sure they have an answer for that.
You know, and
I would be curious to know what it is.
I would say that I am more than mildly uncomfortable with the use of scripture to defend the pursuit of wealth.
Yeah.
I think scripture has a lot to say about money, and it has a lot to say about debt, for sure.
Yeah.
There's a lot of proverbs about how debt is terrible, so Dave's got that part right. And there are some proverbs that talk about if you're wise, there will, you know, in terms of there will be blessing, but there's... You can't turn a proverb into a promise. That's the poor use of scripture. So yeah, there's some loosey-goosey sort of like use money in this, you know, in this way to get this that I haven't heard it from Dave's mouth, so I don't want to speak ill of him, but his followers definitely will treat it. They spin it to a health and wealth gospel type of thing where basically if you do these things, then you will be rich and well off. Which you just you don't find that in scripture very
I would almost clearly. Be more excited about his thing if it wasn't Christian. You know what I mean? Like if it was just a collection of good ideas. Like it's a really great idea to not be in debt and to not like, you know, go crazy on credit cards, buying more than you can afford, and like all those are all really good principles.
Well, that's
you wish it didn't have the twist, T. Is that what you're saying? You just wish it was like pure principles. Like there wasn't
Like we've talked about ad nauseum, even vis-a-vis like Pipe's dad and people that we like, you know, the followers are always crazier than the OG, you know, person who had the idea.
Yeah. And followers versus the founders, man. Always.
Followers versus the founders. And it just seems like the followers, we so desperately want someone in Christendom to tell us that it's okay to be rich. I mean, that's what people desperately want, maybe more than any other thing. So I think Dave has provided that.
And
you know?
I think from a biblical standpoint, there's plenty to be said that it's okay to be rich. Like there are rich people all over the Bible who are not condemned for being rich. Then there's also like it's harder for a rich man to get into heaven than it is for a camel to go through the eye of a needle kind of thing. And so there's some warnings against the idolization of or the idolatry of money. And so, I mean, it's kind of a both and. Like when I remember having a conversation with Ray Ortland shortly after I got to Emmanuel, and we were talking about something related to this, and he just said, he's like, money's just a thing. Like, it's a thing you use like anything else. And so the pursuit is like, the pursuit of more of it can be bad. The use of it well is good. If you have a lot of it, great. If you don't have a lot of it, you're not less loved or blessed. It's just a thing. But we just attach so much meaning and significance to it. And it is a pretty, you know, I mean, it's one of the only things I think the Bible calls a master too. Like, you serve money or you serve God. You don't hear that a lot about, like, I don't know, use of time or something like that.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right, man. That's a good word for sure. Pipe, anything else on the Ramsey Christmas party extravaganza?
Oh, let me think.
How weird did you feel? Like, scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the most weird, 1 being, I love everything about this. What was our level of weirdness?
Wait, so 10 is most weird, 1 is I loved everything about it? I would put myself, like, at a, I don't know, 4?
Yeah.
Because there were some people, like, you could tell, there were people who were just sort of, like, eyes bugging out of their head, crazed about the whole thing, kind of all-in madness. The group who I was with was a much more low-key bunch, more inclined to, like, get some drinks, mingle, move from room to room, kind of appreciate the whole experience but not go nuts, which suits me just fine. And then, I mean, honestly, the thing for it, like, I had to kind of psych myself up for beforehand was, like, I'm going to meet 100 people who I've never met before. So there's just sort of the social mingle aspect of it, which I can navigate just fine. I just have to get myself in the right frame of mind. But, I mean, it was definitely one of those things that I'm like, I'm glad I was there. That was an experience for sure. That was a lot of
fun. Oh, yeah.
It was fun for sure. And there was no forced fun. That's the other thing. There was no, like, we're all going to do X, which I would have gone straight to most uncomfortable.
Yeah. No, for sure. For sure. Boys, speaking of things that occasionally make us uncomfortable, I want to talk about how men talk about how they weep all the time. This is a new thing. This is a new development in ministry, Ronald, so I want to get your take on this. But it seems like more and more we run into guys who they want to hurry up and tell you about the last time they wept and how they've been weeping. And this is coming from a crier, boys. I'm a crier too. So I'm not judging it by any stretch. It's just become a funny thing for
crier
people to talk
or a
about.
Weeper?
I want to say crier because I don't feel like I do a lot of, like, I associate weeping with like blubbering. Like, there's kind of like a sound coming out of your chest or like your vocal cords when you're weeping. Whereas, like, if I watch Ron, I watched the episode last night where Mr. Carson and Mrs. Hughes got married.
Yeah,
I'm not gonna lie to you, man. I cried a little bit. I teared up.
Yeah,
a little
you choked up. I understand.
Dude, I did because I love those two,
absolutely,
man. And it was really happy. And then Tom Branson walked in and ruined it at the reception. But
you didn't like that part? That part choked me up, baby.
Dude, no, I don't like Branson. I just think
That part choked me up because his return was so emotional. And
I just think he's boring. It wasn't emotional to me. I wanted him to stay gone.
Well, there you go. The difference between crying and weeping right there.
Exactly. So
conversation
baby,
is going to make me cry.
Yeah. We got to pivot away from Downton real quick. You're a man of the cloth. You probably run into these weeping guys. What's your take on this?
Well, I remember, like, when I first got into ministry and, like, I never heard everyone use the word weep so much.
Yeah.
And I remember, like, having conversations about that, like, just what you boys are saying, which is like, wait a minute, you guys, like, are we going all like KJV? Is that why you say weep instead of cry? Like, I didn't know, like, what the context was. And then what I kind of realized is that, at least from a ministry context, is people say weep for you to get the idea that they're not merely crying. They're not merely getting choked up, but this is something that is like pouring out from the depths of their soul. So weeping is almost, to me, is like, from a man's point of view, like the more justified cry. Because to cry means like, what? What are you watching, like a rom-com? Like, you want to sit there with your wife crying? Like, dude, you can't do that. Man up. Stop crying. Stop whining. But when you say It's like
oh, it's okay.
It's coming from a deeper, more justified place, right?
If you're wrecked about something serious,
it's like the reformed man's cry
Man's cry. Absolutely.
So weeping is the spiritual ugly crying. So like cry is the other phrase that gets thrown around all the time. Not as much by guys, although it is fairly frequently used, which doesn't make any sense to me because I'm not aware of a lot of attractive crying. But so weeping is the spiritually defensible ugly cry.
Well, Pipe, it's like this. The verse isn't Jesus cried. It's Jesus wept.
Jesus it's also teared not up a Jesus bit. Ugly yeah. cried.
Well, we don't know that.
But it's not what it says. Maybe
it says wept.
Maybe Eugene Peterson Jr. will do a message part two and that's what that verse will say or something.
Correct. Yeah. Okay. It could be. I mean, I wouldn't put it past him, right? Eugene Jr., right? UGJ. But that's how I've always read it. And it's so weird you brought this up, Big T, because like it's something that me and Big M have talked about like repeatedly over the years.
She's really because, like, what's her take on it?
Because like she just kind of, it's a little eye rolly for her, if I'm being honest. Sure. Because it's like, so it'll be like, she'll be like, oh, let me guess, he was weeping. Mm-hmm. It'll be like that. It'll be like that kind of a vibe. Was maybe he crying or was, let me guess, was he weeping, you know, kind of a thing.
Not to put like too fine a point on this, and Pipe, you can answer this too, because you move about and you guys both conference a lot. And so you meet a lot of people in ministry. Like, do you encounter this a lot? Like where you're hanging with some dude at a conference and he just starts weeping? Like, do you get a lot of weepiness in those settings from like peers in the business? You know what I mean?
I mean, I don't know about you, Pipe. No, not in that setting.
Are they so happy to be at a conference that they're not like exactly
getting it's kind of a no weep zone. I feel
it's
like
it's a no weep zone. Yeah.
But I mean, but like when you're doing like a thing where, you know, you're maybe in like a small like pastor's group and somebody's kind of like sharing their heart. And then I think you'll see that's like the weep zone.
You'll see the weep
really
come out.
Like weeping or like getting choked up, because I feel like, I mean, there's a gradient of crying here, right? Like you've got tear running down, like you know, a little bit teary eyed. You've got choked up, you know, where it's a little bit harder to speak. You've got, you know, like letting the tears come down your face, more flowing. That's like crying. That's not quite ugly crying. Then you move into like the sobbing, weeping, ugly cry zone. Those all seem, those are various levels of sanctified, I guess. Yeah. And then, you know, and so I think those are sort of the other end of the spectrum. I don't know the last time I saw a guy weep other than just like a handful of people who have received utterly devastating news.
That's what I think we're getting at. It's more of like more than the kind of crying it is. I think
what you guys are getting at vis-a-vis the weeping though, is that these guys are like, it's normal to weep if you, you know, find out that your mom is dying or, you know, I don't know. Like you get that devastating news, it's normal. But like, aren't you guys more talking about dudes using it almost as a persona thing? Like, I was just weeping for, you know, war refugees or oppressed women or, you know, what, like whatever it is that someone could be weeping for.
There's a movie that just came out with Adam Driver and Scarlett Johansson about a marriage falling apart. And I saw like five people were like, this movie made me weep. I'm like, well, first of all, I don't think it did. Second of all, now I don't want to see it. You know, that does not make me want to watch a movie. It feels persona driven to me because I just, it's really hard to imagine somebody just like blubbering over some of the things that people say they weep about. Crying, yes. Tearing up, yes. Being emotional, yes. And also, I'm not an anti-crier. Like I didn't grow up in a house where it's like crying is weak or something like that. I'm not prone to cry, but this is much more a matter of like, don't misrepresent what you're doing. It seems like a pile of crap when people say they weep about some of the things that they say they weep about.
So when you get on, like when you get on social media and you have like ministry leaders or pastors saying like, this drove me to weeping or something, like it can be something that feels manipulative in some ways. Like, are you trying to put that out there so that we think of you a particular way, or we think like there's a depth there that you want us to respond to and be drawn to, I guess. And I mean, you guys have all been in those meetings where you've all been in those meetings where somebody like just like breaks down in a way that you thought, well, that's strange. That's breaking them down. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, but
like you would have thought, like, I'm not sure, like that. Maybe there's something else going. Maybe there really is something else like going on there, because this seems sure. like something that wouldn't cause them to break down. That's how, you
sure.
know.
Baby, what are the odds you can use the word weeping in a Yoda tweet this next week? I want to take something from every episode and have you work it into a Yoda tweet.
Yeah, I'll work it.
I want that to be a
man,
new.
Ron was throwing fastballs earlier this week. I'm trying to remember
dude,
what
dude, really?
Was.
His Yoda work was great.
I was not. What do you mean? I was not pipe
no,
at all.
No, it was, no, no, no. This, it was
baby,
like,
you're being humble. You're being all humble about your
I'm not. No,
stuff.
It was, hold it, on, was guys, past,
it was pastoral Yoda tweeting, not like inspirational leader garbage, but y'all carry on. I'm gonna find one. It was
thanks for the
it was so good.
Yeah, that's good. Not your usual pap. Your See, usual
I feel so much better that it wasn't just inspirational yeah. Ramzonian, you know, leader tweeting.
Ramzonian leader tweeting. I want you to write one of those though. Do it.
Do I it. Mean, there's a fine line between the two, right? Between pastoral Yoda tweeting and Absolutely. Ramzonian leader tweeting.
Oh, it's a massive difference. Like one of them, Tim Keller, is the OG of. The other, like Michael Hyatt's the OG of. And one of these
oh,
is not
my
like the
goodness.
Other.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Dude, speaking
okay.
of movies.
No, this is it. This
no,
was
go ahead.
This was
go ahead. Yeah.
21 hours ago from the time of this recording. Oh, so this is
boy.
Still like.
Oh, Ronald.
Oh,
still
boy.
Fresh.
This is so good, though. Like, it's a great tweet.
Yeah. Later on.
It says, God will withhold a good gift from you when it's not a gift good when it's not a good gift for you, which is why he's good.
Gosh, that's good Yoda work.
Yeah.
That's
if
a good
I,
gift
if I
of
hadn't
Yoda
stumbled
work.
Over it, it would have had more resonance to it. That was me getting all excited. Sorry, everybody. I was
read replying. It again, Pipe. I do know what this is getting a little more out
then
there.
I have a question. I have
my
a
mistake
question
is going to make me weep.
Yeah.
All right. God will withhold a good gift from you when it's not a good gift for you. Which is why he's good.
Oh, man.
So, yeah Ronnie out here throwing pastoral
let
Yoda
that,
tweet
let
fastballs.
That sink in
I just dropped now, my blue mic.
Ronald, I have a question for you. How long did it take you to craft that Yoda tweet? Like, is that are we looking at like a whole afternoon for that? Or does that get done in 15 minutes?
Baby, do you have it? To fail. I just literally no. It was like 20. It was like 5 seconds. I don't.
Do you have
know.
Like a Moleskine journal like labeled
no,
Yoda,
no,
Yoda
no,
stuff?
No, no. No? Okay. I just do it. I was thinking about something in regards to something I was writing, and I just popped it out there. That's
so
all
when you're in airports and like killing all this time on trips, you don't fill the Moleskine with Yoda stuff that you then just kind of release on a schedule.
I'm not even a Moleskine guy. Yeah. So no, I don't do.
You're
that.
Not.
No.
What are you writing in, baby?
I don't. I jot down little notes and I don't
Interesting.
Know.
Maybe I could have sworn you were a Moleskine guy.
No, I'm really not. I mean, I'm not anti that or anything. It's just, I don't, it's not, it's just never been my thing. But.
Interesting.
I mean, I use the Saddleback version of a Moleskine if you're trying to get technical about it. But
well, I mean, you use some,
do you ever?
Yeah, you use some kind of ridiculous thing to write.
I don't jot down notes though. I'll just do like a little quick notepad on my iPhone thing. Like if I have to remember something, like I don't break out the, I don't break out the pen to do that stuff. So same difference, but
same diff, man. That's good Yoda, baby. That's really good.
Appreciate that. Thanks,
Piper. Do you feel like, in the same way that Brett McCracken is the Brett McCracken of writing about Terry Malick, that Ron is like the Brett McCracken of Yoda work. You know what I mean?
I mean, I wish I was. I wish I was as good with Yoda work as McCracky is with,
Didn't McCracky just drop a new Terry Malick piece?
100%.
I think he might have dropped like four. And maybe it was so long they broke it into four parts. But,
Do you think?
It was Ode to Terry Malick part 11,000.
Do you think Terry Malick is his dad? Like, does the math work age-wise?
Brett McCallick?
Let's see. Hold on. I'm looking up Terry Malick. Oh, it's Terrence Malick. That's right. Google won't find Terry Malick, will it?
Well, sure. Dude, I mean, can you even like that new Malick vehicle? Is that even out there for public consumption yet? I don't know.
I'm not going to be consuming it either way.
The math totally works
like preview,
out.
Does he get like preview privileges?
I bet he gets screeners.
Oh yeah, he gets to go to screenings and stuff. The math totally works out. Nice. Terry Malick is 76. Brett is my age. We were at Whedon together, so he will be he's like 36, 37. So yeah, easy.
Whoa. McCrack went to Wheaton?
He did. We were on the same floor my freshman year.
Oh, that's incredible. What was, dude, what was his persona at Wheaton? Was he like film guy? Was he beret wearing, scarf?
A lot,
well, no, he keeping. his persona outwardly was just like crisp, pulled together suburban kid.
Was he North Face guy? Kind of?
He was more like J. Crew.
Got it. Yep.
And then, yeah, so like preppier rather than like rugged. And then, I mean, he has a really, like, he's just an even keel, kind demeanor, but his writing has always been what it is now. Like, he was the film review guy for the Wheaton College newspaper for 4 years. Like, he got it right out of the gates as a freshman.
Nice.
So there was another guy on the floor who was like filmmaker guy. So he's the one who's like watching Requiem for a Dream on repeat.
Auteur.
While listening to Radiohead loudly, that kind of thing.
Oh, that guy. Yeah. Yeah.
He and I weren't friends.
Nope.
Brett and I got along fine because he was nice to people and he wasn't pompous at all.
Yeah.
But yeah, his interaction with art, he always had like the very refined taste that you could just sort of tell. Like, he had a refined taste about everything, like clothes, food, movies, whatever. That was his thing.
Dude, did McCrack play intramurals?
I don't remember. He might have. I don't feel like I would have remembered that because that's pretty much what I majored in. So, I don't recall seeing him out there.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Just curious. Boys, we have time for one more quick topic, and it has nothing to do with Brett McCracken, because as much as we goof on him for his love of Terrence Malick, he's not a toxic person. And boys, I'm getting a notification on my computer that my microphone has changed. So apologies about that. I think it screwed up my recording. So hopefully we can. It's not great, baby. It really isn't great.
Goodness, you didn't move to Ohio, did you?
No. It's nothing with my internet. I think it's just microphone weirdness. But hopefully we can go with the Skype copy. But
it's still working. It'll be fine.
We have to talk about toxic people and cutting toxic people out of our lives, which is another trending topic these days as the new year approaches and resolutions get made. There are a lot of people talking about how they're going to get toxic people out of their lives. My question to you boys, and we'll start with you, Pipe, is A, what does this mean? And B, how do you actually get a toxic person out of your life? Because as I think about it, it's not really optional. You know what I mean?
I think you just kill them. I mean, I don't know what other – if you need to remove somebody from your life, I think you're left with that option.
You got to put a hit on him, which means James McDonald. We can look into his
– Which seems like – it seems like a toxic solution to a toxic problem potentially.
It really does.
So I'm not sure that – and it's frowned upon as well. I think the hardest part with answering this question for me is trying to define like what is toxic.
Yeah.
Like what – there are people who are jerks. There are people who are annoying. There are people who are exasperating, who are frustrating. There are people who are like – they're sort of an array of things. How many of those things do they have to be before you're like, oh, that person is toxic?
Yeah.
You know, at the extremes, it's fairly obvious. You know, if somebody's abusive or whatever. But I don't know how to diagnose the problem well enough to know who gets amputated from my life.
Do you think that in 2019, toxic is just any person who isn't celebrating every single thing that you do?
Yeah, or the same things that you're celebrating. So, if you lean towards a political candidate and they lean towards the other, they are very clearly toxic, right?
Absolutely.
So everybody's toxic?
Yeah.
I guess, yeah.
To somebody? We're all toxic to somebody?
Yes.
Oh. So if we all get removed, what happens?
It's the new heavens and new earth.
Dude, let's do that. I'm ready for that, man.
Is that how we bring about the end of the world? I'm in.
I think we're coming on to something.
So much for sharing the gospel with all the nations. All right. We just have to cancel each other.
Pipe. I mean, they're toxic nations, you know.
Yeah. So, Ronnie, I have let's put a more personal point on this, because if you were counseling somebody and they were in, you know, they had some difficult relational things going on in their life with in-laws or siblings or whatever, and they said to you, I think they're just really toxic and I need to just kind of remove them from my life, which is a super normal sentence to be said in 2019, almost 2020. What would your response to this person be?
Oh, man. Well, I would just say, hey, can we break down what you mean when you say toxic? Like, let's just try to define that. And then let's determine, like, how when you're in the situation that you're in where it starts feeling like toxicity, like how you can just be, I don't know, we can practice this thing called kindness, you know, in the middle of people not treating us incredibly well.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Because, that's extreme.
Yeah, that sounds like crazy talk to me.
What is this? That's really bad counseling.
I know. But I mean, seriously, I think if we're going to get serious about it for a minute, like, I think there are some people that, yeah, they have such a damaging effect on us in terms of them being truly like toxic people that are like trying to take us down, that maybe are gossiping and slandering. Yeah, there's probably I think we have precedent to kind of push them away and get rid of them. I've had people recently in my life that I have to do that with, for sure. So I think that's legit. And then there's other people that we need to have like forbearance for. We just need to be patient with. Maybe they're not trying to just see us, you know, brought down, but they have personalities that really clash with ours. And I would say, well, you know, calling them toxic is probably not accurate. We just need to be kind and forbearing and patient. I don't know.
Yeah.
There's my counsel, boys.
That's good.
There it is for free. That's a
good pastoral word from our resident man of the cloth.
Is it bad that my my gut response to this when somebody calls somebody else toxic is to immediately turn it around on the person who made the claim and kind of be like, I mean, you did this a little bit, Ron, sort of how do you define that? But just to kind of put the onus on them to be like, yeah, but what are you doing to resolve this situation?
Yeah. I think that's fair.
And I think that's just because I see, like, it, to me, most of these claims of toxicity that I see are people who are looking for an excuse to not be around those who annoy them.
Yeah, I think that's totally true.
Or people who challenge them, or like Ted said, don't celebrate them or celebrate all the things they celebrate. And that's just ridiculous immaturity, it seems like.
Yeah, I mean, like, we're in this era where we don't think we have to, like, if we don't want to tolerate somebody, then we shouldn't have to. And I mean, scripture just gives us a different path than that. You know what I mean? It's like Jesus was on a different path in the way that he interacted towards people that, I mean, I would say we could even make the case for pretty toxic against him. And yet he didn't just find, you know, he just didn't, you know, discard them.
I mean, yeah, other than when he drove him out of the temple with a whip, but,
you know, but there you go.
So. You know, and when you're the son of God, you get to do that too.
That's true.
And man. You actually know when people are actually toxic versus just annoying.
Dude, those are a couple of the perks of being the son of God. Not going to lie.
Just a couple of perks.
Just a couple. Yeah. Well, boys, we are grateful that Jesus had compassion on us. And we're grateful for Compassion International having a sponsorship with us. And in that vein, Piper, why don't you tell us about Compassion?
I'd just like to pause and sit with that segue for a second.
Greatest transition of 2019.
I'm tearing up over here. Like,
are you weeping?
I'm beginning to weep.
I'm on the verge of ugly crying. Oh, no, this is sanctified. No. I'm on the verge of weeping.
That's right.
All right, folks, you know what else will make you weep is the pictures of these children who are in need of your help at compassion.com/thehappyrant. Our partnership with Compassion is primarily built around the sponsorship of children, which is Compassion's primary ministry. So children all over the world who are in third world and developing countries who are in need of education assistance, medical help, and ultimately discipleship. And Compassion will connect you with a child. You can pick age, gender, part of the world. If you have a particular connection that would work better for your family, that would connect well with your kids, whatever that is, they will make that happen. It's $38 a month. So I just got an email today that my Hulu Live price is going up. So Hulu Live is almost twice as much now as sponsoring a child, which makes me think I should be sponsoring children and not having Hulu Live. But just for context's sake, it is way cheaper than what we put into a lot of entertainment. So $38 a month, medical care, food, education assistance, mentoring, and then discipleship will be provided for these kids. So again, go to compassion.com/thehappyrant. You can see the children there. You can get all the information. You can see how your money will be used, other ways to partner with Compassion and support them. We would love to have you do that. Go check it out.
And there you have it. Another great promo read. Maybe the last promo read of 2019, Pipe.
I think it is. I hope I went out on a strong note.
Dude, you did go out on a strong note, and it's been a strong year of promos, as it's been a strong year of Yoda tweeting from Ronald J. Martin, who's making a habit out of leaving every episode a little bit early.
It's like, I think it's why he likes putting the promo at the end, because he's like, good, I can just skip the last 5 minutes, because
Pipe's going to yammer on,
and then Ted's going to sign us off.
Dude, we may have to confront Ronald in love about his lack of commitment to the program.
But we have to do it carefully, or else we are toxic and he will cut us out of his life, which would make this podcast awkward.
Dude, I think we're kind of for sure toxic, you and me, in our own ways. I feel like I was real toxic about Ramsey at the beginning. I'm already kind of feeling guilt about it, but I'm not gonna...
Don't worry, he cut you out of his life already, so you're...
He's definitely cut me out of his life, 100%. So, yeah, I'm not going to feel too bad about it. But, Pipe, it's been fun, man. It's been a good year of radio for the program, and Lord willing, we will have another great year in 2020 with some new sponsors that we have lined up. We've done what we always do on this program, Pipe, in that we've wandered to and fro throughout these topics. And until next time.
The Happy Rant is brought to you by Resonate Recordings. If you go to resonaterecordings.com, you can see the full range of services they offer. So if you're considering starting a podcast, they are the ones we recommend going with. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see their prices, to connect with them and ask any questions, and to see what they can do to help you launch, edit, master, and improve your podcast. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see what they can do to help you launch and improve your podcast.
Need more of God's power in your life? I'm Christina Patterson, host of the Teach Us to Pray podcast, providing practical tips on how to grow your faith through prayer. Subscribe at lifeaudio.com.